Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. One thing that became very clear during our month-long coverage of the future of ag this October is that a lot of what makes a farm or ranch successful is out of the operator's control. So much depends on weather, climate, and other outside forces. With that, we've invited climate scientist William Capehart back to In the Moment. He's joining us from the Black Hills Surgical Hospital studio in SDPB's Rapid City studio to get a better understanding of what we're seeing in our region. He is Associate Professor of Civil and Environmental Engineering at South Dakota School of Mines and Technology. Dr. Capehart, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So one of the things I want to start with, because we did have Laura Edwards, who is the state climatologist, on talking about the fourth National Climate Assessment and rising temperatures in our region, increased precipitation. And I want to dig a little deeper in that and also talk with you about what else we're seeing, specifically in these sort of massive events that at one time seemed really unusual, and now they seem more frequent, or do they? So let's start there. Kick us off.
Okay. Well, one of the things, as Laura indicated, you are seeing more rainfall over this particular region, especially, obviously, as to what has happened over East River. Another thing that we have started to see, of course, is an increase in nighttime temperatures. And a lot of this has to do with the fact that we have more humidity in play. More water is in the atmosphere because the larger atmospheric temperatures are getting warmer, which increases the potential for the air to have a higher humidity in it. That also impacts the intensity of rainfall. And coupled with the higher temperatures, it also changes the potential for convection. So what we're looking at here is not just always more rainfall. You even could have a prediction of flat rainfall over the years. But what's happening is that some of this rainfall is coming down more in bigger, faster bursts. We're having more extreme events. So if you were to look at the rainfall as a distribution, what you'd be seeing here is more rainfall events happening with small periods of time, but a lot more rain coming down during them.
And do we see that that is going to be a pattern that's going to continue? What's causing it, and how are we making some of those scientific connections? Mm-hmm.
Well, one of the ways in which we're looking into that is we're running what are called ensembles. Ensembles are climate models, not just one climate model, but several climate models run by several organizations across the world. And what we do is we take those results and we downscale them to accommodate for like mountain and terrain effects and that type of thing. And from there, what we're able to do is see or at least try to get a feel for what the local impacts are going to be, say, over different regions of South Dakota, for example. One of the things that we will do is we will take those different ensembles, and you can imagine them being different virtual Earths. Each one is a different roll of the die. So not only do we have the dice that we're rolling every day, okay, that's one roll, we have all of these other potential slight variations in the future projections that we can work with. And on top of that, we also have larger picture scenarios. So we have scenarios which we would consider to be perhaps a moderate case of increases in greenhouse gases compared to more greenhouse gases going into the atmosphere as we move into the 21st century. And so we have all of those different perturbations and permutations of the models. And then what we can do is we can take those and then we can basically determine what is the probability that we have, for example, a return interval of say, a 30-year storm event. What is the magnitude of the amount of rainfall that comes down in a day? That would be on the probability of one every 30 years. Now, mind you, when you have a storm like that, if you have a one in 30-year storm today, the chances of having that same magnitude tomorrow is still one in 30. So it's a little hard to communicate that sometimes to the public.
Yeah.
But one of the things that we are seeing is a slow, gradual increase in the frequency of the of the return intervals of strong events. And it's not just happening with respect to, say, a 20-year event becoming a 15 event or a 30-year event becoming a 25-year event. We're also seeing 5-year events becoming 2-year events. And it's those smaller events that sometimes have me a little bit more worried. You can have one very strong rainfall event really pushing a lot of sediment into the river systems that, through runoff and storm flow runoff. Also, you have, these smaller events tend to add up over time. There's been a study, for example, at California Irvine, where they took the major disaster type events that we typically will see or would like not to see and take the cost of those compared to the cost of smaller events, which are more frequent and happening more often in more places. And if you take the balance of those two numbers, they're on par with each other. And so what we could be seeing here is more nuisance events that are kind of paying a very small grading but slowly eating away tax at our infrastructure and at our pocketbooks. Mm-hmm.
So when you do that modeling, then mm-hmm. can you look and see what sort of things would change that path at all? I mean, are there ways to predict, if these things happened on planet Earth, then we would be able to make an adjustment in that? Like how good is the science at this point to sort of see the cause and effect?
Mm-hmm. Well, if you increase the amount of carbon dioxide going in the atmosphere, it's going to get warmer. It's hardwired into the physics. You can't negotiate that part away. Where a lot of the debate is in the science community at this point is how those changes are going to be downscaled to our local regions. That's why we do the downscaling studies, for example, where we can see how a global scale model can be taken and applied to South Dakota, for example. The other thing that we have to look at are the scenarios that are used. Right now, the current scenarios are based on a set of pathways in which the carbon dioxide would increase, as well as methane, aerosols, et cetera. So what we would have to do is we would have to basically look at economic projections as to how our energy portfolio would change, for example, over time. And that's going to have to be done every time we have another one of these model batteries that happen. And these model batteries happen every few years.
Interesting. All right, mm-hmm. let's talk about farming and ranching specifically mm-hmm. in our region. How is the growing zones affected, the mm-hmm. soil health affected? Where do you want to begin there?
Okay. Well, if you just simply look at temperature, for example, growing zones tend to be drawn by the lowest temperature that you get over a period of time, like the average minimum temperature. And what we're starting to see when you start looking at these simulations moving forward in time is a gradual northward creep of the warmer zones. So what we are in, I think right now, if you look at, depending on the map you look at, we're in either zones 4 and zone 5. What you're seeing is more penetration of, for example, zone 5 into our region, the warmer plants that are able to survive in warmer environments and also, less likely to survive in colder environments. Some people think that would be a great thing, and it is in some areas. However, we also tend to take for granted things that hard freezes kill off. So the idea of having to reassess the kind of pest management control that we have over agriculture regions, that's one thing. Also, the other thing to concern ourselves with, once again, is this change in storm frequency. As I said earlier, if you have a really strong storm event, that is going to be the one that puts most of your season's sediment into river systems. And so there are adaptation methods that you can do for that. You can do things like conservation reserve program, grasses along creek banks and stuff like that. But it doesn't do a lot with respect to the actual in-field soils. And the other thing, and this is especially important with East River, and you had David Clay on earlier,
yes.
if I remember
mm-hmm.
correctly. One of the areas that he's concerned with is the rise of sodic soil influences as the lower soils, as water tables increase and get higher and higher, slowly bringing that water up into the into root zones and things like that. That's a major concern from agriculture as well. And once again, if you have these stronger pulses of rainfall that can help bring and temporarily lift and then fall the water table and bring that stuff up with it.
Mm-hmm. So when you talk about the growing zones changing and temperatures rising, one of the mm-hmm. things Laura Edwards mentioned is that's not necessarily during the growing season though. So mm-hmm. it's important to, the winter might be warmer, which would affect that hard freeze, but you wouldn't mm-hmm. necessarily have a better season. There's lots of nuances to that as well.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
All right, let's talk a little bit about that East-West River, that 100th meridian that we all think of as being the rain shower of the Rocky Mountains. How does that sort of change, or does it? Because what changes and what doesn't?
One of the things that we found is that overall, you do see a greater north-south. If you look at basically stuff moving from the south to the north, okay, the temperature bands pretty much uniformly move from south to north. okay, with respect to the warmer temperatures, you know, penetrating into our region. Rainfall, however, is a little trickier. As I've been talking about these changes in return intervals, you tend to see from what we're looking at in the data that we're pulling up is that we have more, or the frequency events are becoming more frequent in East River compared to the south central parts of the state. And then there's a little bit of a possible bump up in the Black Hills. We don't have sufficient information for the Black Hills on that yet. We're still collating data on it. But it looks like East River would be hit more with a change in the extreme frequencies than, say, south central South Dakota, and a little bit more moderate in north central South Dakota.
And what do we haven't talked, it seems, very much about wildfires lately because of the precipitation in the state. How do things like drought and fire change going forward?
Well, if you talk to the state fire meteorologist, Darren Claybo, he will tell you that we're basically operating very often with a 12-month fire season nowadays. And also, once again, once you have more rainfall, there's another mitigating factor. We also have higher temperatures. Higher temperature means more evaporation. So the rainfall that you have coming down, even if it's more frequent and comes down in a big burst and pushes stuff into rivers and then gets pushed off into the system, what you get then is more evaporation, okay, that's taking any of the water that's down in the soil up into the atmosphere. And consequently, that's going to increase your overall long game fuel loading. So that is definitely a concern that we have. The changes in fuel loading over the regions are going to be a big worry.
Okay, we only have about 30 seconds left for this, but we've been really hyper-focused on what's happening in our region. How does a changing climate really affect us, even if it's in another region? Can you sum that up for us in less than 30 seconds?
Well, I mean, for me, I come into climate change from the perspective of national security, because that's basically the environment I grew up in, Marine brat and such. But one of the things that happens with the national security side of things is that you can have a bad year in a certain part of the world, and that really becomes a tipping point. You can still have bad politics, you can still have political instability, but the climate change tends to become a force multiplier. And so what that does is it increases strategic risk in these particular regions, and that's going to be where we have to send our warfighters. Likewise, we have a situation up in the Arctic. We're having more and more open ice and open water in the region, and so we're looking more and more at the possibility of a navigable Arctic. So from a national security perspective, I get very worried about some of the implications of climate change.
Dr. Bill Capehart, thank you so much for being here again. We'll talk to you next time.
All right. No worries. Cheers.